I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
So, perfect world, would you guys give blood?
I would be happy to give blood.
Yeah?
If anyone wanted it.
I would totally give. If they took my blood and didn't expect me to not have sex. I mean, I probably could give blood now because I haven't had sex in a long time.
Does anyone out there want to have sex with Ozzy?
This is a double advert. Can you imagine, like, I can go on a date and be like, sorry, we can't do anything until 2 more weeks because I have blood donation like appointment.
It's a good way of
I would totally do that.
Honestly, it's a good way of keeping yourself chaste. Like, if you want to do like that 3 days.
Yeah, and that's a good filter as well. I could be like, are you a good enough person that you want to allow me to give blood?
Exactly.
This is where I need to.
You should be thanking the NHS and their mildly homophobic policies. Hello and welcome to Why Aren't You a Doctor Yet? The only podcast that uses cutting-edge science to answer the questions that you actually have. Things like, why is the sky blue? What's up with trees? And how many robot wars have to be fought before the robot UN steps in? On my left, as always, I have Oz Ismail. Oz is a PhD student in neuroimaging and dementia, a Tinder aficionado, and once dated a meth head.
Let's kill this story. Okay. People want to know. People are asking me questions, Alex.
We'll get to it in a second. On my right, I have Suhail Patel. Suhail is an amazing journalist. He makes brilliant films for the BBC. And he knows some stuff about science.
I know some things.
So, let's, for once and for all, Oz, what's up with the meth head story? Like, people have been asking. People have been writing in. And
oh man, the meth head story has gained so much momentum. It's insane. The meth head story is that I went out with a guy once who I said to you, Alex, in a gig. I talked about how the guy literally had no teeth.
Mm.
And he was in his 20s.
Mm. And early 20s?
What did you do? Yeah, early 20s, very young. And what did you do? You called back to it and told me that I had gone out with a meth head.
Okay,
this is how the meth head story came to be.
So, okay, so where did you meet them? Online? Plenty of fish?
Grindr.
No, it's cool, whatever you do. So they looked attractive, right? Attractive enough that you were like...
Yeah, like all their photos had no, like, tooth smiles. It was all just, like, toothless smile. I mean, like, literally closed mouth smile.
There we go. Did you ask about the lack of teeth?
I mean, I felt like I couldn't... First of all, they didn't say a word throughout the whole date. So it was like I was on the date and he was also there.
So I'm just saying, I mean, if the dentures fit, it might be a meth head.
That was a perfect laugh response to that joke.
What are you trying to say about my teeth?
Look, I'm just glad you've switched to Tinder, okay?
I mean, now, like, people, this is really good, solid life advice, all right? If people don't have full smiles on their profiles... No, this is terrible advice, but I follow this advice, okay? Like, literally look out for the weird smiles, because there's a reason people weird smile on photos.
So what Oz has done there has actually... he's alienated quite a lot of our listenership who might have... very legit disabilities around their mouth. You are a horrible person, and good day. I'm glad you're moving to America.
I have been found out. I've been playing the good guy on this podcast for so long.
Actually a prick. So Sahel, what have you been working on this week?
So basically I did this video about this girl who's the first state school student to win like the best individual debater at Eating Debates.
Oh shit, that's amazing.
Yeah. So she's a hijabi, right? So yeah. She's wearing a headscarf. So I did this whole video, went out on TV, went out on Facebook and stuff and all this stuff. Typical bare racist comments, just like
what?
Dumb shit. Just like, oh, why is she wearing makeup? She's got a hijab and this, all this stuff. Like, the video you should watch is really good. It's only 2 minutes, but it's quite like inspirational, right? It's all about women's equality and all that type of stuff. So we synced it up with 100 years since the right to vote, yeah?
For some women.
What do you mean by that?
Landed women who are white.
Yeah, basically you had to be over 30. There's loads of fucking rules around there and shit. It was stupid. But it began the process, isn't it? It's significant part of the story, right? Of how women had to vote. So we put this video out 100 years since, women started to get the right to vote. They're breaking into Eton. And instead of being like, wow, this girl's done amazing things. She's come from a council home. She's, parents are immigrants, don't speak any English, don't work as well. She done fucking amazing to beat all these private school boys, right? Or state public school boys. Everyone's coming, she's got big eyebrows. I'm like, dude, what the? I watched that video 100 times while I was cutting it. Now, once that thing of eyebrows are too big, maybe I'm just an idiot, right? I didn't look at that bit and I think, yo, her eyebrows too big. I didn't think that, man, at all. Is that a dude problem, do you think?
Perhaps. I don't know. I mean, why have we turned into a lifestyle podcast? let's just...
I love big eyebrows. They're real sexy.
So where can people see this film?
BBC London Facebook and then on the news website as well. We'll be on there somewhere. Cool. In the ether.
In the ether. Sick. Yeah. So what have we seen in the news this week?
The most exciting thing I've seen is definitely Cheddar Man.
What is Cheddar Man? Sahel, do you know what Cheddar Man is?
Is it something to do with cheese?
It's not to do with cheese. It's not to do with any food. I'm going to put that out there.
Very disappointing.
I can see the disappointment in your face. Okay. All right. Cheddar Man is basically the oldest British person. They found this skeleton of a person, basically, in a town called Cheddar, I think. In Somerset, yeah. I think, yeah. I'm right in saying that.
Yep.
And basically, they unearthed this. It was the whole skeleton. It's about, I think, 10,000 years old. It's really, really old. And they've known for some time that it was the oldest British person to be found.
Yeah.
But the exciting news is, so they've been doing some DNA analysis of samples they've been taking from Cheddar Man.
Yeah.
And turns out that the DNA suggests that Cheddar Man had dark skin, he had black skin.
He's a brother.
And he had curly hair.
Damn.
And blue eyes. And the reason this is so brilliant is because the comments, the reaction to this news story of all the haters who hated the idea that the first British person was black.
So Britain first people have no idea who to hate anymore.
Well,
they start hating themselves.
Basically, they're like, oh shit, we gotta go.
He's like, shit, I'm black. My God.
Nah, the comments have been great. One of my favorite ones was, oh, how do we know that he wasn't just here visiting?
I know. Oh, he was just on holiday. All right. But interest, so when you read the news and the research behind it, turns out they think that he originated from the Middle East, from Africa, then moved to the Middle East. And then eventually ended up in Europe.
So let's get this right. It's not this one person in particular, but it's his lineage.
That's right. Yeah. But I just found it so funny because people are, especially given the amount of hatred you see around these days, that suddenly it's challenged everyone's notion of race. What the fuck is race? If, they've been going on about how all these people came here. And immigration is bullshit and all these arguments have been
fake
putting
news.
Forward.
That's what they probably said.
He's black, or he's sort of really dark skinned, dark brown.
Mm.
Sort of even darker than me, but sort of Oz colour.
Mm-hmm.
But with full curly hair.
Yeah.
Full on these curly hair, but with blue eyes.
That's quite trippy.
Yeah, no. And so what that shows you is that the idea of race as we see it today, so like Africans, Middle Easterns, Europeans, you know, and then all the subgroups in that, like, it's completely blown away, or the idea is so, like, it's so different to what we have as an idea of race. Because when you look at this guy, he doesn't have like what you'd think of as a typical African face.
No.
But he's got incredibly dark skin. And like, you look at his nose, and it's not like, it can, you can sort of see that his nose is sort of a little bit maybe what we think of as like an African nose or like a Middle Eastern nose. Mm. But his lips are like not massive and full. Mm. So it's really like, you can
transitionary,
see,
isn't it?
Yeah, you can see that that mix and match of all these different features.
Yeah.
So thinking that, wow, this is what the world was like, you know, thousands of years ago, before we had lots of subdivision and stuff, when people were still transitioning around the globe.
Mm.
So Oz, I mean, Cheddar Man does look different. He looks different from, I think, lots of people that we see even nowadays. You can sort of see him as a mixed match of European and African and sort of Middle Eastern features. Is there anything in the science that explains why he looks like that?
So basically, the way they've traced Cheddar Man's origins is doing DNA analysis, and you can trace DNA back to sort of places from where people came, as we spoke about in a previous episode. Their results indicate that Cheddar Man probably came from Middle Eastern origin, right? So he would have left Africa.
How does science know about Cheddar Man? What does science know about Cheddar Man? Who is Cheddar Man? How is Cheddar Man?
Why is Cheddar Man?
Why is Cheddar Man? Where is Cheddar Man?
I just really want cheese now.
Cheddar Man?
I want a cheese and a man.
Oh.
Okay, so Cheddar Man. How does science know so much about him?
They basically use DNA analysis to trace origins of basically where various groups of people came from.
So we talked about that in like a recent episode when we talked about our genetic testing, like genetic testing ourselves. Is it similar to that?
It is, but it's, I think what's fascinating is they can, given that Cheddar Man is so like so old, I think they've used powdered bits of his bone.
Wow.
To extract DNA to trace back possibly where Cheddar Man came from.
Okay, so when you're saying where he came from, we're not talking about him like that one dude.
No, okay. It's basically where his ancestors would have come from.
So where he's really from.
Where he's really from. The question that we got asked all the time.
So Oz, where is Cheddar Man really from?
Well, his bone powder. His bone powder suggests.
What does his bone powder suggest? Bone powder sounds like what Richard Pryor called cocaine. That's a good reference for anyone that knows about putting cocaine on the penis. Anyway, so what does his bone powder say?
So his bone powder suggests that his ancestors would have left Africa and then moved to the Middle East, because there's some Middle Eastern origins in his genome, in his DNA, and then later headed into Europe.
Wow.
And then eventually ended up in the UK.
So that's where Cheddar Man is really
Cheddar
from.
Man is so already so diverse.
Wow. Cheddar Man would have absolutely hated working in any office environment.
But the thing is, Cheddar Man was there first. So, like, nobody else... Like, basically, they're saying this is the oldest Briton. Cheddar Man owns Briton.
So what I like about that is all three of us can have that link to Cheddar Man. You know, Africa, the Middle East, Asia.
Yeah, I mean, what I would like is for services like 23andMe is to now match how much of our DNA is linked to Cheddar Man, because then my I can be God. Like, I was here first!
Get out of my country, you bastards!
Watch all of us at the front of an independence
EMP rally.
Yeah, for that, that British melanin party.
Fucking give it! Fucking bastards!
No, but I mean, the thing is, if you laugh at it, but people genuinely think that this is a story that's been made up to be politically correct. And I just find that ridiculous, that you put scientific evidence in front of someone and they still refuse to believe it.
Fake news.
Yeah. But like, some of the comments that on the internet are bloody hilarious.
Yeah, because it's painful for them, isn't it? To because it affects their worldview so dramatically that it causes physical pain. Like, you know, it would really trip these racists out if they found out he was Muslim as well.
He probably, I mean, came from the Middle East.
That would really fuck with him.
Now, I think my favourite thing I saw on Twitter was someone going, I cannot wait until the Daily Mail call Cheddar Man a grime artist.
Yeah.
I want Cheddar Man to release some proto-human version of Boy in the Corner.
Yeah, I can imagine that because, I mean, like, Cheddar Man and Great MC.
Great, it's just Cheddar Man. There is no one else. Cheddar Man, my travels.
My story.
Cheddar Man, I'm here.
But it's funny, isn't it? Like, some of the reaction, actually, on a serious note, some people genuinely believe that this is a made-up story.
Fake news.
Yeah, people do. People think this is fake news or, like, want to believe it's fake news because they refuse to accept this idea that their ancestry
it's cognitive dissonance.
You know? Like dark-skinned or like curly-haired features. Like, it's crazy that they can't accept that.
It's like when we talked about, you know, the genetic tests, you know, we were talking about those YouTubes and video about people finding out they're like 2% black or, you know, whatever it is. Alex, you really enjoyed that.
I love those videos. I'll say it again. Videos of racists that find out they have genetic heritage from places that they hate is honestly my favorite class of YouTube videos.
Really?
Honestly, is that...
That's quite the accolade.
Mate. It's that and then maybe cooking videos.
Cooking, okay.
Yeah.
Two good choices.
I mean, I can get on board with the cooking videos.
No, mate. Honestly, like after I watched Jerry from Louisiana find out that he's a little bit Spanish, I really want to make a frittata. I mean, Sahel, you're a person that puts stories out there on the internet and they are, you know, 99.999995% true.
Mm.
Like,
what is truth?
That's, again, your profession, not mine.
Who am I?
Who are you?
Who are you?
Why are you in the building? Well, no. So what sort of comments have you been seeing? And are these sort of normal comments that you can expect in such a high-profile
story? To be fair, I haven't been hugely across the story because I've been super busy. It's a fun story that I've been, you know, reading and discussing it here. But it's interesting because some of the comments and some of the like reactions people have been having, you know, strike me as like... You know, people trying to rationalize their worldview, and it's causing them a lot of discomfort. Like to try and absorb this information that original kind of what's the word I'm looking for?
The idea that the original Britain or a very early Britain could be brown.
Could be brown. So it just fucks with their worldview so much that it's almost impossible for them to. Believe like it kills them physical pain, right? Like
it causes them pain,
and this is cognitive dissonance. So there's some really good examples.
So what are some of the comments that we've seen?
Okay, listen to this, right? Bullshit, just more blackwashing of our history. My granddad was white and his granddad was white.
My god,
and that's science fact. Nuff said. # Cheddar Man. Like, seriously, he's so angry.
Keep going. I love it.
Okay, another one. This one. Wait, I thought where's the one I lost? Oh, this is great. Yeah, it's an attempt to undermine our identity. He doesn't look African, and if that's what they're implying, it's a European skull shape. If they would release the DNA data, people would make up their own minds. Yeah, because we need the DNA data, because, like, literally, that's all we need to make up our minds. This is insane.
If another stupid twit or so-called researcher tries to tell me that the first humans in Britain were black, I will personally hunt him down. I'm sick of listening to these so-called thick academics. Talking about you guys.
I saw that comment and I was pissing myself.
You got to do it in a geezer voice, isn't it? Like, you know what I mean? I think a proportion of that is the current BBC narrative that black people have always been in Britain. And in fact, we're probably there first, so people can be silenced for questioning heritage. That's not a funny one.
That went on for a while.
I don't know why this was in the best list. It was literally not funny at all.
Okay, one person has said, "Hello, what a load of bloody bullshit. Next day," within quotation marks, "will be telling us that Jesus was also not white." There's more.
Wait, go. Carry on.
Bloody vegans, feminists, and gender neutralists at it again, trying to appease the ethnic minority.
I'm definitely appeased. Let's just say that your comment appeased me.
Why has he got to do it? Oh my god.
I like the vegans bit.
Why the vegans?
bloody vegans supporting the melanin state.
Oh, wait, this is jokes. This is just, if 1 in 10 of us are related to Cheddar Man, does that mean we're all mini Cheddars?
Suhail, did you write that comment?
No.
Is that from your Twitter?
I wish I did. You can't tell what color someone's skin is from their bones because their bones are white, damn it. Science.
Look, I think the most interesting thing is, like I said on Twitter, this looks like an alternate future you. Oz, it does.
I mean,
it looks like you
his hair game is strong.
Yeah, like, everyone's been saying, a lot of people saying they fancy him and shit.
Yeah,
so,
here's the thing. It's because
I mean, you know, it's like a made up model. No, like the people who fancy him
that's
are going to be
disappointed. Great, 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 great grandpappy.
And like his cheekbones.
See,
pretty amazing.
Now my favourite was like people were like, oh yeah, the black renaissance is continuing. Yeah, yeah. Don't know why they called him Cheddar Man. We should have called him alternate names. Yam Man. Plantain Paul. Oh, Jollof James. I would have all of those. All of them.
Someone here says, I just love the expression on Cheddar Man's face. It's like he knows how much it will annoy white supremacists to learn that earliest Britons had dark skin.
Can't wait for Cheddar Man to be described as a grime artist in certain newspapers. Cheddar Man's been here for a minute but couldn't introduce these man to seasonings earlier. Cheddar Man's a fed.
That's outrage.
Here's, like, the Daily Mail comments are really funny.
They are super funny.
Mm-hmm. One guy says, sounds all too convenient and completely unprovable without a time machine.
I think this.
So, yeah. Like, where did all the white people come from?
Okay, that is a good question. Where did white people come from?
So, I think one theory is that people became light-skinned or developed or evolved to have light skin over time because of the lack of sunlight in sort of these parts of the world. And we need vitamin D, and skin start to become lighter and lighter because lighter skin can absorb more sunlight.
Okay, so... Right?
But also, they also think that this has emerged because of change in lifestyle. So Cheddar Man, they think, was hunter-gatherer. But as lifestyle changed, so there was like farming started to happen, people were obtaining less vitamin D from diet. And so that would have also contributed to skin starting to become lighter.
Mm.
That's the theory.
That's the significant part of this, isn't it? Is that the fact that they didn't realize till how late people were dark skinned.
Mm.
And there was a similar finding in Spain where they found a similar type of dark skinned, blue eyed fellow from around the same time period. So that's the and like, you know, some of the other comments I was reading talking about ways of migration to the UK over time. So, you know, he could be one part of that, I would imagine, you know. Mm.
So yeah, I mean, we're talking about waves of migration. Yeah, we are looking at a single sample in a single time point at one point. Is it 100,000 years ago?
Yeah, well, no, 10,000.
So we're looking at a single time point 10,000 years ago.
Mm.
So we can't take too much from it. We can't say everyone in Britain was black.
Sure.
In the same way we can't say everyone in Britain wasn't black. I mean, previously they thought Cheddar Man looked like everyone else that you see around Somerset right now. That is, you know, very, very, very West Country.
Yeah, so like the original reconstruction of Cheddar Man was a white guy.
Mm.
And it's only since they got all this new DNA information that really strongly suggested that he had very dark skin, blue eyes, and dark hair, which was curly, that they've reconstructed this image. And again, for me, that's the fascination in it for me, that you can obtain this kind of information from something that is so old.
Mm.
And also the other thing for me is like we said in the previous episode, there was so much movement like of people over so much time that's why I don't understand why it's so hard for people to believe that we come from so many different places and they get so hatey about, you know, people's immigration and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's because we're tribal people, isn't it, at the end of the day, and that feeds into that narrative, doesn't it?
Mm.
So seeing stuff like these in these type of articles, it just totally fucks with their heads, hasn't it? Like, it just totally shatters their worldview in a way. Mm. And maybe that's a good thing.
I don't know. Like, do you think...
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound. And you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss. There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Think, okay, it's like Alex, do you think you are open to this kind of information because of your scientific training, or is it something more than that? Because I feel like when I get information like this, it's always interesting. It doesn't scare me in any way. But some people genuinely hate this and they're scared by the idea that they're different. They could have been a different race.
Yeah.
I mean, a race is so fluid.
Mm.
Yeah.
Like, I'm incredibly mixed race. I did one of those, you know, 23andMe genetic testing things, even though those things are trash, you know. Because there's so much that we don't know about race, as Cheddarman has proved.
Yeah.
So the idea of race and ethnicity is so fluid, so dynamic. Of course, it's going to be something that, when these sorts of things happen, it's not going to cast my world into, I don't know, flames and stuff. And I think it's more a personal thing than being sciencey in general, because, you know, this is just new news, you know?
Yeah.
Because imagine they found 100 other samples from Cheddarman's time. I'd be interested to know how many of those were equally dark skinned. I'd like to know how many of them were darker. Mm. I'd like to know how many of them were lighter. Perhaps we don't have the technology with DNA to get exact skin tone. We don't have the idea of perhaps exact genetic code to look at, like the SNPs, the single nucleotide polymorphisms, those little changes in DNA that could code for different skin pigmentation. But like, I'd be really interested to see that, and I think it's just as we accrue more and more data that we have a better picture. And it's like Sahel, you're saying, it comes in waves. Like, his wave could have been super dark, and then they could have intermixed with perhaps the next wave and the next wave. Like, we don't have an idea. We're getting little pockets of information, and we're getting it in we're getting pockets of information, we're getting more and more information as our techniques get more and more powerful. But right now it's like trying to put a puzzle together without the entire, we don't have the picture on the front of the box, and we're just putting in like bits, we're putting in bits and pieces here and there. And I think it's a massive way forward, but like, we're not going to be there just yet. So I can't give blood.
Why is that?
Because I have epilepsy, and I'm not saying that I have it worse than the gays, but I have it worse than the gays.
Do you though?
Yes.
Do you though?
I will tell you what it's like being oppressed. Because of epilepsy, you can't give blood if you've been on medication for the past 3 years.
Right.
So you have to be 3 years medication free, and you have to be seizure free. Because they say that, I think it's because the anti-epileptic, the anti-convulsants, like the anti-epilepsy drugs, will still be in your blood. Also, the fact is they say that, they don't want to give people who are giving blood and have epilepsy seizures, because the loss of blood can trigger stress, which can be some people's trigger for epilepsy.
Wow, okay.
At the same time, I have nocturnal epilepsy, so I'll be fine. You know,
yeah.
Like, unless I'm asleep while you're taking my blood, I'll be good. And I find it really weird. So, I'm really annoys me, because I'm, you know, a mixed race person, and if I can give blood to people who are ethnically like me, people who wouldn't have ability to have successful blood transfusions otherwise. I think that's a damn shame.
And also
I can't give, you can't give stem cells as well. I can't do I can't be a stem bone cells? Marrow. Bone marrow. I can't be a bone marrow person.
Funny enough, I did one of my first stories when I was working at a local newspaper was about a kid, Asian kid, who couldn't get a bone marrow transplant.
Yeah.
Because similar to what you were saying, it's like, I don't know what it is about
Was that rum and coke too much?
I don't know what it is about ethnic minorities. Yeah?
It's coming here with a cheddar man.
With a cheddar man. But I don't know what it is about ethnic minorities, but we don't give as much.
Yeah, we don't.
Blood or, and it's even me, like when I would sign up to be an organ donor, my mom was like, why'd you do that? And I was like, I'm dead, I don't need those fucking organs.
Yeah,
like,
no, it's true.
I'm having to give that shit away. And she's like, but you know, this and that. And I'm like, that's stupid as fuck. I don't need my kidneys. I'm dead. Like, you know, why wouldn't I give them? Like, you know, it's just a mentality, isn't it?
Mm.
I need to cut off.
What, epilepsy? Inject, yeah.
Oh, okay. That's good to know.
Yeah. Deep was checking. Yeah, okay, don't get acupuncture.
Also tattoos, I think.
Yeah.
So, you know, ethnic minority people are perhaps a bit more inclined to not give organs or to donate blood or to donate stem cells.
But we should.
Yeah, completely. Like, yeah.
So if you listen to this, donate some shit, motherfuckers.
If you, honestly, if you, because of this podcast, or you just do in general, if you are ethnic minority and you are signed up to be an organ donor or you're signed up to be a blood donor, send us a picture of your blood donation card or just some proof that you are on Twitter or on our Facebook page, and we will send you something nice, because that is a very good thing to do.
Absolutely. I mean, currently, apparently, according to Give Blood, the NHS website, only 1% of people who give blood in England are black.
Exactly.
That's so low.
I can completely see it, though, because my parents, right? My parents are liberal, but they're Ghanaian liberal, which means that, you know, they think that, like, lesbian marriage is great because twice the amount of fufu will be pounded, and that is a very productive household. Yeah. So, you know, when I signed up to be a organ donor, I know you had this with your mom, Sahel.
Yeah.
Like, I signed up to be an organ donor. And they were like, oh no, if you do that, then they won't be as likely to save your life, you know, or, you know, like, you know, that's, you know, you shouldn't do that. It's bad juju. You know, they can do things. I'm like, mom, they're not going to take my organs away from me while I'm still alive.
You're going to be like, yo, give me my fucking
like, no, give me my retinas. Ah, no, I'm blind. I can't see. Ah. Culturally, were you guys raised to give like blood or like to... like give organs? Like, what do your family think about it?
So I was raised to give like rotis and like, you know what I mean? but I
only started thinking about giving blood, giving organs after I moved to the UK.
Yeah.
And first of all, I remember signing up to be a blood donor before I had sexy times with people and I didn't know what sex was. We've already discussed this in the previous episode, so I'm gonna go into that again.
Moving swiftly on.
But then once I actually wanted to do it, by then I was sexually active and I was like, oh shit, now I can't give blood. And it, like I said, it made me feel really shit and made me feel dirty, and it didn't help because that was when I was coming out as well. But in terms of giving organs, like, because I've heard my family always talk about, you know, returning your entire body to the grave and how it, like, all of this religious stuff that they believe in, I never stopped to think about becoming an organ donor. But now I'm like, why? I don't need my organs once I'm dead. Somebody else should have them for sure.
Wait, so that's like a super Muslim thing, right?
Again, this is the thing. I don't think it's a super Muslim thing. I think it's more a cultural thing.
Yeah.
Because nowhere, like when you look into like religious texts, nowhere does it actually say you can or can't do it. It's scholars who have interpreted this as, I think that this is not okay because it's mutilation of the body, it belongs to God, blah, blah, blah. It's basically people's own take on it. Like, it's like most religious stuff. It's people's interpretation of what they want other people to believe.
Culturally, yeah, I was brought up to think that, you know, it's very good to help your fellow man and stuff.
Mm.
But at the same time, that very much stops at giving organs. It's only recently and I actually signed up to be an organ donor. I think I opted in accidentally with my last driving license or something.
Right.
And so I'm just opted in now, and I've got a organ donor card that just came, and I was like, oh, okay, cool. But I don't know if I can actually donate my organs if I have epilepsy.
So this is, I was thinking the same thing from a gay perspective. Like, I don't know if they want my organs. If, like, say, like, I had sex yesterday and I died today, like, are they going to be like, oh, well.
Why did you have sex yesterday and die today? What are you fucking?
Fuck, you know. Like, if there's one way to die, that is definitely it. Yeah.
Oh, Dr. Patel, we've got a case here. Internal bleeding. Dr. Patel, what do you mean? What do you make of this?
I think they had a fucking death by sex.
Dr. Patel, I can't. The intestines, how are they so shriveled?
Well, Dr. Lethbridge, has anyone ever had this conversation with
you? Please discuss my post-mortem, please.
Dr. Lethbridge, I think this is a classic case of death by penetration.
He's been split in two. He looks like
God, how big was that penis?
Oh, gross.
Is that how you plan to go?
I didn't say that I was going to die during sex.
You said, no, you said yesterday, die today. Exactly, yeah. Like being hit by a car.
Yeah, like I had sex and I'm going home, I'm doing the walk of shame and bam, hit by a bus.
Bam. I'm dead.
So, yeah, what? And you think, yeah, like, so you that happens and then you end up at hospital and they're like, do we take his organs?
I don't know. Like, I don't know. I tried to actually look this up because I wanted to know what would happen if I signed up for organ donation, and like, because there's all these laws with gay people giving blood. I cannot find this information, and it's not clear even on the organ donation website whether I can or not.
Mm. So if anyone out there is a doctor or a medical professional or just works within the NHS and knows whether or not a gay person can give organs, or if someone with epilepsy can give organs, or if they actually check the status of either of those things, you know, when you receive a cadaver, I guess, a body, when you receive a
cadaver, yes.
when you receive someone's freshly dead body and are harvesting it for organs, are taking organs out, yeah, are harvesting for organs, let us know, like, tweet us or email us or comment on Facebook. Like, we kind of really want to know that.
Well, I thought we could talk about how blood donation laws have finally changed for gay people.
Yeah.
But is it a good thing? I'm saying it like it's a great thing, and it is a great thing, but also it's not so much of a great thing in some ways.
Why is that?
Because of the way there is still a law for gay people to donate blood in a way there isn't for straight people.
Okay, so take us back. What were the notable points in the timeline for gay men donating? Is it gay men or is it all gay people? How's it work?
It's basically if you've ever slept with a man, any man who has slept with a man, there was a restriction in the 80s, and a restriction was imposed on all gay men, or any basically men who slept with men. They actually have an acronym for it called MSM, men who sleep with men.
Mm. I've seen that on Craigslist, yes.
What are you doing on Craigslist? No, let's not go into that now.
That's right, that's men seeking men.
And basically because of HIV and the rise in HIV in the 1980s, all governments and all sort of, I don't know, authorities said, all right, gay people cannot give blood.
Mm.
And this was only sort of slightly relaxed in the UK in 2011.
So you're telling me that the UK just stopped that law completely, or?
They didn't.
Oh.
So in 2011, they changed the law, and they changed it in a way that would seem like it was a positive step for gay people, but it really wasn't. So all they did was in 2011, they said, okay, if you don't sleep with anyone for like a year, then you can maybe give blood.
Wow.
But who is sexually active doesn't have sex for a year.
What? No. What? No, I totally get laid all the time. I'm getting laid right now.
I don't think you know what getting laid is.
What?
No. So they've said that if you're a man who's had sex with men ever in your life, as long as you don't have sex with either a man or a woman for a year, you can give blood.
With another man.
Oh, okay.
Basically, the issue was men sleeping with men.
So basically, if you're a man who slept with men in the past, could you give blood if you were sleeping with women in that year?
Again, explicitly, it doesn't say that anywhere. But wow. the only question that basically you have to fill in like a questionnaire when you go to give blood. And I think the only questions they ask about it is, when did you last sleep with another man?
Okay, so it's about
like there's a question that goes, do you sleep with other men? Yes, no, I think. And then they
yes, no, I think I do.
Look, I was drunk.
I don't know because I've never
dark.
Been able to give blood.
Okay, so 2011. And so what's happened recently?
So recently, so in 2011, they relaxed that law. And it was like, okay, if you don't have sex for a year, we can have your gay blood. But...
your fabulous blood.
But also like that, I remember being so angry at that point, going, who the fuck doesn't sleep with anybody for a year just to give blood? Like, that doesn't happen. This is just a bullshit move to make it seem like you're being friendly towards gays, but you're not. It's still an anti-gay law.
The way you said fabulous blood made me think like one of those novelty shots with like blood but with glitter in it.
I mean, I would like to know why they're cock blocking me, because it's fucking bullshit, isn't it?
I want to do right by my fellow man, but I also want to get laid.
So it's basically saying, yeah, like, don't, you can choose between being kind and doing the right thing for your community or having sex.
I mean, so what's changed recently?
So in, I think late last year, they changed the law again. And this time the change is very positive because it was evidence-based. It was scientifically driven. And they looked at the stats. They looked at the way we can now test for HIV. And they said, okay, if you gay men can now give blood if they haven't had sex for 3 months.
3 months?
Yeah. So this period is called a deferral period. So they changed the deferral period in the UK for men who have sex with men to 3 months. This is, of course, a huge, huge, huge step forward because of the stigma attached to like HIV and the gay population. But also, if you look at the law, like there's still a law against gay people giving blood.
And okay? Bi men, I guess.
And bisexual men, yeah. And also, especially now that we're moving towards like people being more open with their sexuality and all of these things, laws like this are still unhelpful, I think.
It seems quite antiquated. It seems like a relic of a law. And just rather than just say we were wrong, we just want to whittle it away till everyone forgets about it.
You're right. And also, I think what I don't understand is law originally came from the 80s when loads and loads of gay men were getting HIV. And HIV was very much seen as a gay thing. And AIDS was very much seen as the gay disease. But now, because of testing, because of treatments that are available, the number of HIV cases are falling. But when you look at the stats of number of new cases, because there are still new cases, of course, like that come up. In 2015, almost 40% of those new cases were from heterosexual people.
Really?
Yeah. And also, they do point out, the people who did these stats do point out that whilst there is a higher incidence of HIV diagnosis in gay men, that is also slightly weighted towards them because more gay people get tested more frequently. And testing is becoming a more, like, I get tested every 3 to 6 months. Like, all my friends do. So I think it is something that is kind of drilled into us so much because of how things were in the 80s. Right? So what they've done now is they've looked at these stats and gone, okay, the number of cases are falling, like, and also the ways we can test for HIV have improved significantly. So you can now detect HIV within as quick as 2 weeks using sort of new technologies.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But to be absolutely sure, so that 2 week window, the actual window period, to be absolutely sure, 99.9% certain, would be 3 months. Within 3 months, you will know for sure if you've picked up HIV.
Okay.
I mean, also, this is what I really couldn't get my head around, especially pre-2011, when I... Because I didn't actually know about this. Like, before... When I tried to give blood once, and I found out that I couldn't because I'm gay. And I remember thinking, first of all, on one level, it makes you feel like your blood is dirty, I guess, right? And it's just such a damaging thing to allow people to feel this way, especially when you know that you're having safe sex and you're not exposing yourself to risk. And also when you know that everybody's blood, when they donated, everybody's blood is so heavily screened. The UK blood bank is one of the safest blood banks in the world, I think, because it's so heavily screened before they actually use the blood.
Mm.
So that's why the question that kept coming up in my mind was, so even if I was carrying something, they would test for it. So why are you stopping me from even trying to give blood?
Yeah. You know? I think it's just change takes time. And, you know, we went from, what was it originally? You couldn't give it at all.
In 2011.
You couldn't give it at all originally.
Couldn't give it at all.
We went from a complete blanket ban to 3 months in 30 years, 30 plus years. Slow progress, but progress nonetheless. And I think your anger is completely justified. Completely justified. And I think it's completely wrong. But it's only a matter of time before the whole law will go. Right? It'll be gone soon.
And also, when you look at it, like, I think, in on one hand, yeah, it's annoying still that there is still a law. But on the other hand, when you look at other countries, like in the States, I think it's still a year.
Really?
So, like, and again, it's like you're just excluding most gay people because people have sex. It's 2018. People have sex, all right?
Mm.
Then there are some countries which, if you've ever slept with a man ever, you cannot. They will never take your blood.
So, do you think that these things are going to get better?
I mean, I think so. I think the way we are able to detect HIV is changing so quickly. Like, even in the last few years, like, being able to detect it in 2 weeks is massive. Like, the tests are becoming more and more sensitive. And also, HIV research is moving so quickly that they are starting to find therapies that they hope will start to work to completely eradicate it. Then we're not there yet. But for example, take something like antiretroviral drugs that they use to treat people now who are HIV positive.
What do those drugs do?
Basically, they do is they suppress the virus, and you have to use multiple types of drugs to suppress the virus and keep the load of the virus low enough to a point where when you do a HIV test, you can't detect it at all.
Okay, so it's like keeping it like at a really base level.
But basically, you can't even detect it.
Wow.
And the only reason, like, it's called undetectable is because if you stop taking those drugs, the viral load will come up to a detectable level.
So it's definitely still there.
It's there. So basically, HIV has this ability to kind of stay, even at a low level, it stays hidden.
Mm.
But it doesn't, because it's such a low level, it doesn't affect that person's health in any way. That person lives a normal, healthy life. They can't, even if they have unprotected sex, as long as they're taking their medication, they can have unprotected sex and never pass the virus on to somebody else.
Wow.
So that's how far we have come. Like, drugs are amazing at controlling HIV. But I think we will get to a place where we will be able to cure it fully, eliminate from someone to the point where they don't need to take drugs again. I hope we will get there, given the rate at which we're progressing.
So Oz, as a gay man, if you could talk to policymakers, what is something you'd like to tell them?
I would say just look at it from a scientific, from a biological point of view. If you're going to screen everybody's blood, that's all really that you need to do. Okay. On one hand, you do ask questions from donors of what high risk activities they do. Like, for example, are they sharing needles, stuff like that. You ask those questions, ask them if they're having high risk sexual activity, and then use that as a reason to maybe screen more. But just blanket banning all gay people, because you're alienating all gay people regardless of how safe they're being, and saying that their blood is still risky, it's still considered in a way
dirty.
Yeah,
they're saying your blood is dirty,
yeah, because you have, you know, you choose to, is it not choose to, do you have this, like, it's almost like they're saying you have this lifestyle that is not safe for us to kind of be part of, and so we don't want to share your blood just in case something goes wrong. But that's not true. Look at the biological evidence, look at it, do the test, do the screening. That's all you need.
So guys, we've reached the end of the episode.
Oh.
Yay.
I've been Alex Lathbridge. I've been joined by Oz and Sahel.
See you later, guys.
What up?
And this has been Why Aren't You a Doctor Yet? Bye. So what you've got to do for us right now is leave us an iTunes review. I know you hear it everywhere, but it's super important because we want that sweet internet validation. Or you can send us your questions or comments by email. It's at whynotadoc@gmail.com. And if you want to stay up to date with what we're doing, you can go by social media. It's at whynotadoc on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Remember, iTunes review, follow us on social media, annoy us by email. Thanks.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.